Line, Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat and Cooling and Electrical Games Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. D. Mace is here. How we doing, D. Mace?
Doing wonderful. The sun is shining.
It is shining. There's and after I heard Joe Rexroad bitching all this morning about how cold it was in the studio, I packed my parka. I walk in here and I'm sweating. Joe needs to learn how to use the thermostat. Willie D, how are you doing?
I'll tell you what, you never know what the temperature's going to be in our studio. That is so for true. Sure. That is for sure. And quick shout out to my friends over at Vanderbilt. I had a really nice time at the Hall of Fame celebration. My good friend, teammate, roommate, Billy McCaffrey, inducted with I think six other people plus some Ooh. Legends over the weekend. They did a first-class job at the dinner. Got a chance to go to Memorial Gym, see him with those guys out on the court at halftime. Good stuff. So shout out to the Commodores.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, it was great. Billy McCaffrey, unbelievable player. You played against his brother Ed many times, Derek, for the Broncos. You know those great teams, Rod Smith, Ed McCaffrey, Terrell Davis, John Elway, the back-to-back champions there. Ed was a big part of that. So Ed is Billy's older brother.
Oh, okay.
So that makes Billy Christian's uncle, right? So Christian McCaffrey gave Billy a shout-out. Jim Wyatt caught up with him at the Pro Bowl games, and he was talking about how they used to watch the old VCR tapes of Billy when he was playing, which made me feel a little bit old, but Billy could hoop. That is for sure. SEC Player of the Year, co-player of the year with Jamal Mashburn in 1993 for the Commodores, who were the regular season champs, 14-2, should have been 15-1. There was a travel on a buzzer beater by Stacy Poole for Florida that should not have counted, but got to the Sweet 16, so it was a great season, and so it was great to commemorate that.
What a sports family.
Unbelievable sports family.
Eat your heart out, Manning.
Yeah, he's got other brother, other you know, cousins and you know, nephews, too. You know, Ed has several boys. You know, Dylan was a quarterback, transferred from Michigan. There's another brother, Luke, was at Nebraska for a while.
Smart move from him. By him, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about that transfer portal today. Those quarterbacks transfer a lot. They're not alone, that's
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. Nick Kiesier is here as well behind the glass. Nick, how we doing?
Doing great. Can't complain. The NHL skills competition was a snooze fest.
Sort of like the NFL
as
stuff.
As was the Pro Bowl games.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know what they try to do. They know the game's not going to be a real game, so they try to make entertaining stuff with the skills and the Pro Bowl games. That's not easy to pull off. And the NHL, I mean, I love PK Subban, but he was trying to carry it. You know, it just it didn't work very well.
It
just dragged on
cheese.
Too long. Yeah,
a lot of cheese.
Great material for the people on social media to have fun at people's expense.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. But I want to get into, there was some Titans news that came out over the weekend. We'll get into that. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, will join us at 1 o'clock. But before we get into all of that, I want to start here because there was a very eye-opening article that came out last week in The Athletic. This is from Max Olson. And I think that we all understand the current state that we are in college football is unlike anything that we've ever seen before. I've heard so many times, you know, college football as we know it is gone. And while I think that's kind of a dramatic way to look at it, there is a certain element of it that's true. There's a certain element of we are living in a world of college football where the olden days or maybe the vintage days of college football are no more. But I think in this article by Max Olson, The Athletic, it really put into perspective just how massive these changes are and just how rapidly the world is changing. Because Max Olson put it into perspective, looked at the quarterbacks, top 50 quarterbacks from 2017 to 2020, and more than 70% of those 50 quarterbacks have transferred. And if that quarterback doesn't start in either year one or year two, that number goes up to over 80%. So you are looking at a vast majority of these quarterbacks, some of the top quarterbacks in college football, that end up in different places and pretty quickly at that. I think I look at the freshman quarterbacks, true freshman quarterbacks, How often do they really start their first year? Almost never. And if they do start their first year, you're kind of in for a whirlwind. You're like, okay, hold on to your seats a little bit, you know, because this isn't going to be the easiest year. So it's the norm in college football where a true freshman, I don't care if it's a five-star Arch Manning, who is not planning to start this next year, or if it's a three-star, whoever it might be, who's just in the room. Very rarely do college football quarterbacks start in their true freshman season, yet the statistics show that there is an overwhelming trend that when they do not start that first year, and especially that second year, they're out the door. And so we know these trends have been going on in college football, and I always ask myself, is this just simply a change, or is this a bad change in college football?
Yeah, it's been coming on for a while. And when we started reading that article by Max Olson, mm-hmm. who's going to join us at 11:30, He did all of the figures, right? I think all of us knew that it was a lot, but I think when he put the numbers in front of you, the 70%, we were all like, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was that high.
Whoa. Yeah.
You know? And it has you thinking in all different directions. For example, JT Daniels, we've heard about him somewhere along the line, right? If you're a college football fan, you probably heard about him because he stopped off in the SEC at one point. At one point, he was supposed to be Georgia's quarterback, and he got beat out by, of course, Stetson Bennett, mm-hmm. right? One of the 17 quarterbacks that Stetson Bennett had to beat out at some point in Georgia. JT Daniels has gone to 4 schools. 5-star recruit, mm-hmm. USC, Georgia, West Virginia, Rice. 4 schools. Now, maybe he's had a great college experience, and maybe someday he'll look back on it and say, man, what an amazing ride. You know, I don't know what his experience is like, but That is a pretty wild ride at a college age year. I just think about, what do I look back on in college? Well, it's the friends that you grow up with, right? I mean, that's a big part of it, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're talking about, you're not talking about a particular class you're in. You know, maybe you can think of a couple of fun professors you had, but really it's your camaraderie, right? It's your teammates you grow up with. You end up in their weddings. They end up in your wedding.
No,
you know,
you're right.
All those things. Like, you got lifelong relationships.
Yeah.
When you go to 4 schools in, I guess, 6 years,
you ain't got no friends?
Maybe he's been in, you do, but you're coming and going, right? You can't, it's hard to have that, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Like, so he's just one example. Like, yeah. I was watching college basketball, it's the same thing. I'm watching guys playing for Vanderbilt that have been to 3 schools. Ole Miss, same thing. And pick a school, right, in college basketball. It might be even crazier in college basketball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But particularly for quarterbacks, this is nuts.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? Good for them, because for so many years, these coaches and these universities have hoarded these players. And when they've tried to transfer, they made it so that they couldn't. They deliberately made it so that they couldn't.
Made it hard.
They made it extremely hard. No matter what the situation was, they knew good and well these players wasn't going to play. They probably were not good enough to be on that roster. But you know what? They were not going to let them out of there. It was essentially is a 1-year contract. That's all it is. But they made it so hard for these men and women, these young men and women, to transfer to. Even if they wanted to go to a rival school, they couldn't do it. Why? Because these coaches wanted to keep everybody in house. So good for them. These kids are able to transfer now. They're able to move. If it's not working at one school, they're able to move to the other. Now, the problem that I have with it is, you know, if I'm talking to a young man or his parents, it's like, listen, I understand that, you know, sometimes you pick a university or a program because a particular coach, or maybe that's probably where you have been wanting to go, because from the outside looking in, you're like, man, this is an exciting school. It seems like they got everything going. And then when you get there, you start filling things out. It's not quite your fit. So whether it be on a football field, basketball court, baseball diamond, whatever, it's just not your fit. So you want to transfer. I get that. Transfer, go somewhere else. But then after that, there has to come a point where, as a parent, you say, no, we are going to stay here and we're going to play this thing out. You know, because just because you move to another school after this doesn't mean it's going to work. There's going to be competition everywhere. So if you're running away from competition, you might as well not enroll in no university, you know, or don't play sports, just go to class if you are running away from competition. If you want to transfer after 1 year, that's fine, do it. But after that, we need to pump a brakes on these things, because I don't need to have a guy or a girl transferring to two or three different schools. And then when you look at it, it's like you're in your third year. And like you said, Willie, third year, it's like you have no friends. You know, you got to wonder if your credits transfer from one university to the next. It's the same with college, I mean, with high school sports. They're making it so that these kids can't leave one school and go to the next. It's like pulling teeth to try to get them to do it. Or you can't transfer within the district or something like that. It's like if it's not working at one school, let these kids move on to another school. But then the parents, you got to understand, once you move from one school to the next, tell your son and your daughter, listen, this is it. Like, we are going to make it work here. First, academically. I don't give a damn about sports. Academically, let's make it work here. And if we can make it work here academically, then the sports will come. You know, if you're good, they're going to find you. You're going to find the field, but you can't keep transferring. But again, I'm not mad that these kids, that they transfer, because for so long, these universities have held these young men and women sort of captive. Like, as soon as I sign this contract, it's like it's a binding. It can't be broken.
Yeah,
this is how y'all treated it. Exactly, this is how y'all treated it for like 40 years.
Yeah, and it's particularly tough for the quarterback, as we've been talking about, because there's only one quarterback that wins the job, and if he stays healthy and he does a good job, then you sit there and go, "Well, where does that leave me?" But I think sometimes it just seems to me with the numbers, there's probably some situations where you're not quite sure what you're getting into when you start going down this rabbit hole of, well, it didn't work here, I'll go here. Well, it's not working here, let's just go over here. You're able to work over here. At some point, you got to
you got to face competition.
Right. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, where am I? You know, if the worst thing in the world is I'm a backup quarterback, well, that's maybe what coaches, you are.
And these coaches need to be completely honest with these
men because
and
women. The coaches want to stack the numbers. Mm-hmm. That's what they've done for decades, right? How do you win? You stack great recruiting classes on top of each other, and like you said, you hoard the players.
Exactly.
That's an advantage for a coach that's trying to win, but that also
hurts
creates those situations for those players.
Especially at the quarterback position. Yeah.
And I do think that there are probably several instances in every collegiate sport where there are players, you know, or individuals that are like, look, man, I don't want to deal with this competition. I'm leaving. I do think that there's a good bit of truth to that. But I think if you look at, you know, this article, of course, Max Olson will join us in about 15 minutes or so. This highlights 2017 till now. 2020, really, but let's look at until now. Well, let's look at the Heisman Trophy winners from 2017 until now. In the last 6 years, 5 of those Heisman winners were quarterbacks. 4 of those 5 quarterbacks all transferred. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield won in 2017. He transferred from Texas Tech to Oklahoma. 2018, Kyler Murray won. He transferred from A&M to Oklahoma. 2019, Joe Burrow won. He transferred from Ohio State to LSU. 2020, Devontae Smith won. 2021, Bryce Young won. And that was the one lone quarterback that hadn't transferred and won the Heisman. And of course, this past year, Caleb Williams, who transferred from Oklahoma to USC. So I hear you on the, you know, you don't have any friends or, you know, it might make it more difficult, but recent history would show you won't be successful unless you do transfer. Look at Jalen Hurts, for example.
Absolutely.
Would he have been drafted if he was still behind Tua Tagovailoa on the depth chart?
That's what I think is great about this article, because it lays out all the – because there are great examples where it works.
Billy McCaffrey
transferred from Duke to Vanderbilt. It worked for him. I mean, there's great stories about that. But you just have to realize that sometimes it doesn't work. You can also look at this. This article kind of lays out – all of the players, you know, you take that top 50 list. There's great stories, and there's also some stories like, ooh, that's too bad.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, how did we get to this point in college football, and will we ever get back to the college football of the past? We'll get into that coming up next. Of course, Max Olson, who wrote this Athletic article, will join us in 15 minutes. It's Caroline Willie DeMace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Speaking on free agency, I've been vocal about this before, just kind of that mystery report of an $8 million NIL deal for a kid who hasn't maybe thrown a snap in college. What are your thoughts on this? It seems like it's kind of swelling and growing. And y'all talk about having to compete with those other kind of levels.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously said a lot about NIL from the beginning of it. Let's make sure that we understand. I love that the players are getting paid, and I just say how it is. So, you know, I mean, I guess I got called a clown before for saying how it is. NIL has a lot to do with where players go. And to not think that's crazy. And I mean, it'd literally be like being a head coach in the NFL, signing a great free agency class, you know, of signing guys, going out and getting these great players and coming up here and saying to you guys, that had nothing, the contracts had nothing to do with why the players came here. You know, they just want to come play for me. So, obviously, it has a lot to do with where players go, and it should. I mean, you're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, you know. Adults choose jobs a lot of times for money, for salary. So why would a kid not?
There you go. That was Lane Kiffin on NIL. And again, we were breaking down this Athletic article from Max Olson that says, from 2017 to 2020, of the top 50 high school quarterbacks signing with FBS programs, more than 70% of them have transferred away during their time in college. And I think, and that's not even considering the past 2 years of college football, where we have seen a mass exodus from so many different programs of quarterbacks jumping from school to school to school. And I think that there's a few reasons why that's motivated a lot of this movement. Number one, looking at 2020 and the COVID year, and that so many players have that extra year of eligibility, which might push some high school recruits down on the depth chart because players can stick around longer. And that's one reason why. Another reason being the transfer rule, the one-time transfer rule that came into effect in 2021. So now players can transfer one time without having to sit out. They can be immediately eligible. In the past, before that one-time transfer rule, that deterred, I think, a lot of players from transferring because they didn't want to sit out that 1 year. They wanted to play immediately. But I think the biggest thing and most obvious thing here, and something that Lane Kiffin pointed out in that clip that we came back on, is NIL. It's really obvious to see how NIL has fueled the transfer portal, where players can transfer, where they can get more money. But I think almost the more interesting thing here is how the transfer portal could impact NIL. Because I look at all of these quarterbacks, players, period, but also specifically quarterbacks, how much money is involved in this 2023 recruiting class? I mean, look, just a few hours down the road, Tennessee, it signed an $8 million contract with a quarterback coming in next year, Nico Iamaleava. Mm-hmm. I think I said that right. I've really been working on it.
What? I'm trusting you because I've never even tried to say it. I've been waiting. It's like I want to hear more people say it. Mm-hmm. And then kind of teach myself how to say it. He's not there yet.
Yeah.
I don't think I have had to say it yet.
Iamaleava.
But I know who this guy is. Okay,
yes,
good.
$8 million.
You can be my trailblazer. Then.
I'll try my best. $8 million to a 17, 18-year-old kid. So I do wonder how the transfer portal will impact NIL, because the stats show. And Nico Iamaleava is not the only one that's getting paid that much money. There are so many quarterbacks in this 2023 class that are making multi-millions of dollars. The statistics show a majority of those kids that have signed to all of this money are probably going to leave.
Is that going to
deter boosters from giving that much money out? And I really think it might.
Yeah. Max Olson calculates the number. If you are making an investment in a top 100 quarterback recruit, this is just the top 100. I guess these are the guys that would probably command or probably have the leverage to get something.
Exactly.
The chances that he stays at your school, because, I mean, you're not putting NIL down on the kid individually, likely, right? You're representing a school. You're wanting your school to win, so you're investing in recruits for your school.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't do you any good if he leaves, but the chance that kid that you're investing in before he ever plays, that Nico would be an example, 35%. So $8 million in theory, we've seen the Jalen Rashada thing, that's been a nightmare, right?
Nightmare in itself.
So I think the whole question remains is how legit are some of these collectives? Can they follow through on what they're promising? What are the promises? Apparently, in the Rashada case, there was a contract that was signed, but in the language of the contract, it basically gave Florida an out. You know, we can end this. Mm-hmm. So what does the contract mean if you sign something like that? So we got all that going on. But if you're putting investment down, is it a good investment?
No.
Because there's only a 35% chance that kid stays at your school.
No, it's not a good investment. But, I mean, it's an investment that you made and you knew the risk when you're making an investment. So
you should anyway.
Exactly. So it's just like anything else, whether you're in the stock market or not. It's you want to know what am I investing in? What are the risks? You telling me that I'm going to get 10% on my return, but what are the risks that I may not? Okay, well, these are the risks. Okay, well, I'm going to still invest because I think that, you know, my profit will, you know, supersede any risk that I may have to take. And that's how I guess they see, you know, when you sign these individuals, man or woman, to these NIL deals. Some people are like, listen, I know there's only a 30% chance I might get, you know, our ROI on this kid, but I'm going to take that chance because if he does stay or she does stay, then that should help my university win, you know, whether it's conference championships, going to a national championship or whatnot. So, but I wonder how, this is what I do wonder, is when these young men and women sign these NIL deals and they choose to leave, does the deal then, is the deal voided once they leave? Do they get the money up front? How much do they get up front? You know, because it's the kid that went to Florida, you know, he signed a deal on a promise that he was going to get X amount of dollars. When he signs the deal, the people say, we ain't got the money. So
that was a big part of it.
Yeah,
they promised him money that exactly. They really didn't have, these collectives.
So there has to be some type of mechanism in place where it's just like a free agent. That's all these kids are now. Let's just call it what it is. That's all they are. These kids are free agent. Once they hit the 12th grade or the 11th grade, or they have a 5-star written down on their profile in the 9th grade, 10th grade, they are essentially future free agents. So when they get ready to go to college, who's going to, and Lane was right, who's going to give the biggest contract? All right, let me look at all these contracts. Let me go on all my visits. It's free agency.
And the difference
that's all
is,
it is.
It happens twice a year in college football. And free agency in the NFL, you're signed to a contract, mm-hmm. you're locked in for a few years. College football, there's two transfer portal windows.
Yeah.
So you're a free agent twice every single
year. Well,
it's
really, you can transfer. They only give you one, but really, if you graduate early, that's the second transfer.
That's true.
You know, so you really get two transfers.
The grad transfer.
Yeah, your grad transfer. So essentially, you can be a free agent, like, after your first year, well, you're going into your first year.
Yep, as a high school player.
After your first year, after you finish your freshman year, and then 2 years later, if you graduate early, you can become another free agent, which is great, which is cool. But this is how it's going to be. Let's call it what it is. It's not NIL. It's free agency. That's all it is.
And it's a lot on somebody's shoulders at that age,
exactly.
I think.
And to your point, D-Mace, about some of the contracts and how things are paid out, I think that depends state to state.
Yeah.
Because I know California and Louisiana, I think Tennessee might be the same way, where in high school you can start making NIL money.
Mm-hmm.
So Nico Iamaleava, he lives in California. He's making money from Tennessee already.
So, hell, he was a free agent already.
He's been a free agent.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it depends on the contracts as well. Like, I look at Texas A&M's 2022 recruiting class. They had, just a collection of 5-stars. And I don't know exactly how much money was put into that recruiting class, but enough for Nick Saban to say something about it, that mm-hmm. they quote-unquote bought their recruiting class. But you also saw so many players, both from that recruiting class and the year before, leave Texas A&M this past year. I think Texas A&M was one of the top schools in terms of players who transferred away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because a lot of those kids looked at the big number that they could get, and they looked at it and said, look, if you're offering me, let's say, $8 million, and I don't know if that was the truth. I'll just use that as a base number. You can offer me $2 million a year. And you say, if you transfer, that extra $4 to $6 million, whatever's left over, is going to be voided. Mm-hmm. And they could look at it and say, okay, that's fine. I'll come to Texas A&M for a year. I'll make $2 million, which is probably more than a lot of other kids in college football are making in their entire careers. And then after that, I'll transfer to the school that I really wanted to play for in the beginning. And maybe I won't be making as much money, but I already made $2 million. So I think that I look at Texas A&M's recruiting class this past year and how many players have transferred away. And I can only look at money to be the only motivating factor of one coming to Texas A&M and then leaving Texas A&M.
Well, I mean, the crazy part about it is this has been going on for many, many years. But we had to, you know, sort of under the table. The free agency was under the table. They couldn't do as many or make it as big as they wanted to. So it's been going on now. You're able to make it as much as you want to out in the open. And let's go. If you want to come to my school, come on over to Texas. I'll pay you X million dollars. Come on over to Michigan State. I'll pay you X million. That's just the way it is. What I don't like, and I'm surprised there hasn't been more of an uproar, let these kids be kids in high school. Seriously, let them be kids in high school.
That's the problem.
I understand some situations where, you know, parents are working parents and they're struggling, and I get that part. But the burden that the kid has already to go to college and to excel in athletics, but that burden then is put on him or her in high school. 16 years old. You get in high school, what?
You got to get your driver's license.
Exactly. Some kids, I mean, there are kids that are 15 years old that are like 6'10". They future bat. I mean, they know they're going to be number one, basically lottery picks. Well, these kids got to carry the weight of their whole family from the age of 15 on. That's a lot of pressure for these kids in high school. I'm surprised there wasn't more pushback on that.
We will talk to the source coming up next, Max Olson of The Athletic, who broke down the transfer portal craziness with quarterbacks. He will join us coming up next. It's Caroline Willie Demas, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline Willie Demas, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. A wonderful article in The Athletic by Max Olson that highlights from 2017 to 2020, the top 50 high school quarterbacks who have all signed with FBS programs, 70% of those quarterbacks transferred at some point when they were in college. And joining us now is Max Olson of The Athletic. Appreciate you for joining us, Max. And I look at this article and I was stunned. You know, I knew that these changes were happening in college football. I knew that quarterbacks and really players at any position were transferring at a crazy rate. But when you put a numerical value to it, it really puts it into perspective. But I look at, let's say, like the Heisman Trophy winners over the last few years from 2017 until 2022. Five of the six of those winners were quarterbacks. Four of the five of those quarterbacks all transferred. So is there maybe history telling us that in order to have a lot of success at the highest level of college football, you almost have to transfer?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me on. You know, I think every kid out there probably thinks that everyone who's like a backup, hasn't won his job, probably thinks, I'm actually Joe Burrow. I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to prove it and show everybody that I can really play at this level. And, you know, I think there's just a mentality now that these quarterbacks have coming from high school into college, they kind of understand this is how it goes. You go in, you try to prove yourself and learn the offense and earn a starting job. And if you don't, you just move on to the next school. I mean, I think that everybody kind of, you know, there's like a start or depart kind of mentality now that just comes with the position. It doesn't mean that these guys are bad at picking colleges coming out of high school, but I just think that this is just a standard part of the process. Now you go somewhere where you think you have an opportunity and you like the coaches and stuff, but over the course of a college career, a lot of stuff happens, even if you do win a starting job early on in your career. And we see lots of guys that succeed as freshmen and sophomores and still end up transferring during their careers. And so, yeah, this is just across the position now. And even it's not just five stars and four stars. It's kind of everybody now. There's just so much more quarterback movement than ever before.
And using that same example, Max Olson is with us with The Athletic. The two of the six Heisman Trophy winners that didn't transfer happened to both be from Alabama, Devontae Smith in 2020, Bryce Young in 2021. And it's astonishing to me how Nick Saban has found a way to not just adapt, but also to thrive in all of these changes of college football. What has Nick Saban figured out? What is the formula for him to keep these good players in-house?
Yeah, it's true. When you go through all these quarterbacks that I looked at from the 2017 through 2020 recruiting classes, The big outlier in all of this is Alabama, because they had Tua. He didn't transfer. They had Mac Jones back him up and then take over. He didn't transfer. And then Bryce Young succeeded them in his second year and became a Heisman winner. And so I'm fascinated to see if they can continue that. Obviously, they're going into a situation in 23 now where it's an open quarterback competition, and they've had a few guys in the program who've had a chance to develop and stuff. And so whoever doesn't win that job will probably move on and play somewhere else. But I think that even with all the coaching changes they've had on that staff and all that, like, there's just, I think players understand, like, you know, being the quarterback at Alabama really is a lottery ticket. You got to kind of stick it out and wait for your turn. And if you get it, you have a chance to, you know, certainly compete for all those honors and be a high draft pick.
We're talking with Mac Olson of The Athletic. If you haven't read his article, you need to read it. How many top quarterback recruits transfer. They're staggering attrition of CFB most coveted players. Now, Max, looking at these guys, and it's sort of jumbled up right now, and we all know why, because of the COVID years. Do you see it sort of thinning out once we get past the final wave of that COVID extra year of these quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think we're certainly seeing that extra year of eligibility that everybody got for 2020 is certainly factoring into the decisions that some of these quarterbacks are making, especially this offseason. You've had a few guys like Sam Hartman going from Wake Forest to Notre Dame, or Devin Leary going from NC State to Kentucky, as an example. Like, you've had some players that probably in the past would have gone pro and just, you know, tried to do your best in the draft process to, you know, you're probably going to be a mid to late round pick, but you kind of go through that traditional approach and you try to make a roster or make a practice squad or whatever. And these guys now, Brennan Armstrong, another one going from, you know, Virginia to NC State, like they're staying, and they're staying for one more year in college, and they're transferring and trying to spend that final season somewhere else. And so you have a group of players, in addition to the normal kind of transfer culture that's going on, you have some of these players who, you know, Spencer Sanders leaving Oklahoma State out as a four-year starter, and he's going to go spend 1 year at Ole Miss and try to win the job there. They'd kind of, you know, take advantage of that, and maybe there's some NIL money you can make by doing that. And so, yeah, it puts more players on the market at that position, and especially some experienced players that traditionally based on their experience and success, you're rarely going to see those kind of players on the transfer market.
Now, with the expansion of college football playoffs, will we see more sort of TCU schools that, and what I mean is schools that are not usually, you know, in the top five or top four, making it to the playoffs? Will we start to see more of them because of these transfers, these coveted quarterbacks that transfers to not the high profile schools?
You know, it's a good point. I think that when you open up the door to, you know, more programs having a chance to compete for the postseason and, you know, play meaningful playoff games and stuff in college football, then it probably gives more teams an opportunity to go get some of these pretty good ones when they enter the market, because the kid can be convinced that, you know, hey, this program's in position to maybe go win their conference and make it to the playoff. And when you expand that club from 4 to 12, I do think it will impact the decisions that, you know, some of these players are making. But, you know, it's funny, TCU is kind of they're kind of the exception to the rule at this point. You know, what they were able to do with Max Duggan this year, Max Duggan is one of the few guys that didn't transfer in his recruiting class. In fact, 45 of the 50 in his class did transfer. And so he's a guy that stuck it out. And even this offseason when they had a coaching change and he lost his job, you know, traditionally those would be kind of the check marks of a guy that's going to leave as a grad transfer and go somewhere else. But he loved it at TCU, and look what he pulled off. So you still hope you see some of those kind of stories of guys sticking it out and not leaving the first time something goes wrong.
Max, I think what you do a great job of is sort of illustrating it can work. There's plenty of great success stories of players who transferred and hit it big on the second school, but there's also some stories where it doesn't work. But the thing that I think got me more than anything else was just the straight up numbers. I had never really seen the math, so let's go through it for people that haven't read it yet. The percentage of the top 50 quarterbacks from, is it 2017 to 2020?
That's
is
right.
70% have transferred, right? So seven of every 10 will transfer at least once.
It's actually more than that. I mean, if you go through that list, so from four classes, you get 200 quarterbacks. And if you take out the guys that moved to other positions and the guys that had to, you know, retire for medical reasons or gave up football, that whittles it down to 168 players. And out of the 168, 75% of them transferred.
It's incredible. And so the next level, too, and this is where I think maybe it's hard, because we understand that when you come in as a true freshman, it's very hard to start in college, especially with the way these guys move around. You want experienced guys. So if you don't start in your first or second year, tell us what those numbers go to.
If you're not getting on the field in your first 2 years, like, that's it. That's kind of the fork in the road for a lot of these guys. And if you don't start a game in your first 2 years on campus, what I found among these quarterbacks, 87% of them transferred during their career. And in a lot of cases, that's just the first transfer. I mean, you see many more examples now of guys going to three or even four schools during their career.
I mean, we were just discussing this earlier before you came on, what that is like socially. Like what that, I would never know what that's like. I stayed in one place for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Derek did. Caroline did. We didn't transfer. But we think about the things that you gain socially, the people you're around, you grow up in one place. That's got to be difficult for these guys. Do they consider all this when they bounce around like that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. And I think that, like, you're seeing, like, for example, what we've seen from Jalen Hurts, you know, in his evolution as an NFL quarterback. Like, you have to factor in that's a guy that played for a bunch of different OCs at Alabama and then switched and went to Oklahoma and played for a different one with Lincoln Riley. Like, sometimes, ideally, yeah, if you're learning and improving in the same system for 3 or 4 years, like, it's going to turn out pretty good. You know, there's a lot of, like, the guys that, you know, from this group that, you know, the Trevor Lawrences of the world who kind of stick on the same plan for 3, 4 years, yeah, you know, maybe those guys are going to be hits no matter what. But, I mean, there's certainly a lot of benefit to being in one place. And yeah, you're right, in terms of, like, developing that bond with your team and just getting better over the course of your career, like, There's obviously a lot of benefits to staying in one place for 4 years, but it's just one of those positions where only one guy can start. And it's like nowadays, like, it's just, when you talk with college coaches, the thing they kind of lament is, man, it's just so hard to have a good room now. It's so hard to have 3 or 4 scholarship guys who are all kind of there and kind of following the plan and understanding, if I'm not the guy this year, maybe I'm the guy next year.
Well, there's so many of those old adages. If you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. But seeing these numbers, do you think more schools would do kind of like Jim Harbaugh and say, I'm going to start quarterback A in week 1, and I'm going to start quarterback B in week 2, just so I get them on the field and they feel like they're part of it?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think that it certainly, this, like, the knowledge that this is going to happen with guys, it factors into how these coaches approach the quarterback battle. And you know, you don't really often see them, like, settle on a guy at the end of the spring, because you know that the guy who isn't going to be the starter probably is going to transfer in May, you know? And so you have to kind of either drag these out or like Jim Harbaugh did, like, you know, you kind of extend it as long as you possibly can. And ultimately what happened, you know, Cade McNamara did not win the job, gets injured, and now he's going to Iowa. So that's just kind of, you know, everybody knows, like, okay, if I don't win this, that's okay. We'll get through this season, and I'll go start somewhere else next year.
Okay, final thing for you. We just talked about Nico Iamaleava. That, was I close, Caroline?
Iamaleava.
Okay.
It takes some time.
I got to
practice
that a
little bit.
It's like
Oyengalele. It's tough.
But we've been hearing about this guy, right, for a long time. $8 million. He's just now getting on the campus. We still don't know what it's going to look like when he's actually on the field. A lot of things can happen, as we've just documented here. But if you're investing, if you're an investor in the collectives, and you see these numbers, it's clearly not a very good investment. So do we think that that's going to evolve over time as this continues?
Yeah, I think that, like, the high numbers we're seeing for him or for Jaden Rashada, like, I don't really think that's going to reflect the future of spending on quarterbacks. Like, certainly those guys are worth more than others, and certainly they're going to command NIL money over the course of their career at the college level. But, like, I think you're kind of seeing, like, the, you know, the idea of, like, the 8-figure deal for the quarterback just doesn't really make sense. I mean, Nico is a very talented player who I think has a really bright future, but he's not walking into Tennessee at a time when they don't have anybody. You know what I mean? Joe Milton is certainly kind of set to be the guy next year. And so, like, these guys kind of know what the situation is. Like, there's not many schools that are promising you the starting job as a true freshman now. And so you hope the player comes in and has some patience and develops and understands that they've got a plan for you down the road here. But, I mean, so many of these guys transfer within 1 or 2 years now that, yeah, if you're spending money on that, like, I don't know, maybe the money helps retain them. And I think that's kind of – obviously that's very important. But, like, man, in terms of just trying to put millions of dollars on quarterbacks and hoping that they stick around, like, to me, like, probably not a lot of ROI on that, especially when your collective is probably going to go out and chase the guy in the next class.
Max Olson of The Athletic, we appreciate you for joining us. Where can the people find you?
Twitter, Max_Olson, and you can find my work on The Athletic.
All right, wonderful. Appreciate you. We'll chat soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, coming up next, we'll get into more of that. We'll finish up our thoughts on Max Olson's article in The Athletic. Over 70% of the top 50 quarterbacks from 2017 to 2020 have transferred in their times in college. Wild. Caroline Relay D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Let's get to your phones. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought, we just had Max Olson of The Athletic on breaking down an article that he put out that just put out the numbers, the sheer volume of quarterbacks that have been put through the transfer portal, found new destinations, and that was just from 2017 to 2020. That's over 70% of the top 50 quarterbacks coming into college football eventually transferred. That's not even taking into account 2021, 2022, the NIL era, the COVID years, the one-time transfer rule. I mean, it is just astronomical. Kyle texts in and says, the term NIL as the system is set up now is a joke. NIL implies that these kids will get sponsorship deals and or have opportunities to sign autographs, make money from their personal jersey sales, etc. As currently constructed, it's straight up pay to play. You come to our school, we will drop the bag in your bank account. No sponsors needed, just a bag.
Yeah, Jalen Rashada, is it Jaden or Jalen?
Jaden.
Jaden Rashada. There is a new article that the Athletic has done some great investigative work on this. And from what I'm told, you know, they only put in there what they could really substantiate. They were The rumors go to a whole nother level, but it's not something that you can feel good about journalistically to put in an article. But they got the agreement, right? And some of the things, the money he was supposed to get, you know, was almost what a rookie quarterback. They use, who's the kid out of Pittsburgh? Kenny Pickett, yeah. Right? First-round draft pick, the general contract a first-round NFL quarterback will get. Rashada's agreement was about $1 million less. It was close. Mm-hmm. Imagine getting that before you've ever taken a snap in college. You're getting what a first-round pick in the NFL is going to get. But, of course, that was all a mirage. But it was all this money. And if you read what he was supposed to do, it wasn't a whole lot, right? You post once a month, twice a month. You show up to 8 to 10 appearances. Who knows if there'll actually be a need for you to show up to that many places in Gainesville. Gainesville's not that big of a town, right? So it is essentially pay for play. It's an interesting thing. And I do agree. Mm-hmm. Like, I think back. Would it have been nice when I was playing at Vanderbilt, and I was a scrub, right? I was a reserve player. I played 5 to 7 minutes a game. I was not high profile, but Nashville at the time didn't have the Predators, didn't have the Titans. If these rules were in there where you could get a little money for an autograph signing or for an appearance over there, that would have been really nice, right? Mm-hmm. And a couple extra $100 in our pockets as players would have seemed like a ton. At the time, we would have thought we were rich. Right, I do think that's kind of what it was designed to do. And obviously the star players would get more than the scrubs like me, but it's gone. It's shot right past that, right? It's gone way beyond that.
Yeah, it has. And my concern isn't, you know, again, it isn't that these young men and women are getting paid. It isn't for me what they have to necessarily, the obligations that comes along with the money, whether it be signing, you know, 2 hours, you know, every spring for, you know, two weekends during spring ball, whether you're doing that or whether they just want you to sit at the computer. And like I said, Willie, last week, sit at the computer. If you're working at a car dealership, sit at the computer and find all of the 1995 Oldsmobiles that are out there blue. Find them all and just drop them off on my desk. Whatever you want these young men and women to do. In regards to that, you know, it doesn't matter to me. If you want them to just walk in and say hi, put some papers on the table and leave, that's your business. You know, you are paying them to do that. So to me, it doesn't matter. It's what matters to me is you promising these young men and women, you getting them excited, and you're promising them, if you go to this university, you will get X amount of dollars. And then when they sign at that university, then all of a sudden, you know, just like in the kid from Florida's case, there's no money to be had. To me, that's completely wrong. Like, listen, I am not, until I get my first, you know, it's just like a contract. Until I get my first installment, like an NFL contract, listen, when my signing bonus hit my bank account, that's when it's real. But if you promised me $5 million and it's supposed to be in my checking account or savings account, by the time I walk out this building, if it ain't there, we ain't got a contract. because you didn't promise me. You didn't. I don't have the money you promised me. So if you're going to promise these young men and women money if they sign to your university, make sure the money is in their account they sign. Make sure it's a one-year deal, a year-to-year deal, because it protects you and it protects them. If they want to leave, you don't have to pay them. I don't know how this NIL deal stuff works, because my kid, I mean, he played sports, but he wasn't good enough to play, you know, to get a scholarship. And I understand that. I recognize that. And I'm great with it, you know. But if you're going to promise these young men and women the money if they go to your university, make it a year-to-year deal. So if he or she goes and they excel, then you come back to the table and re-up again. If they choose to transfer, no harm, no foul. I tried to get them to come. They didn't come. Well, they came and they transferred. I don't have to pay you the remainder of whatever it is. You go on to another university. But I don't know how the NIL stuff works. So, you know, it could be that way.
It's so new. Does anybody really know how it works? Like, we're still figuring this out, right? It's so new.
Right.
There's going to be some trials and tribulations. And I think the Rashada case is a great cautionary tale that all of these parties that you're talking about should learn from. And I fear that some of the pitfalls that happened, it's going to take a while. So my question, really, you guys think about it. What's it going to look like in 5 years? How different, as you work out some of the kinks here, will it settle into what we all hope it can be? And that's something that's good overall for the game, good for the kids, you know, the right level, you know, and not just this crazy chaos that we're seeing right now.
It's also new. So I think that every school is just trying to jump on it and to stay competitive. I think that Florida has now become the example that not only do individual players and their families have to protect themselves as far as NIL is concerned, these schools have to protect themselves. Because I know it wasn't the University of Florida football team that was involved in that NIL deal falling through with Jaden Rashada, but it looks bad on them. Now the reputation of Florida football is damaged. If I'm an 18, 17, 16-year-old kid and in high school getting recruited by Florida, I'm a little bit leery because they've already made promises that they couldn't keep. Are they going to do that again to me?
Yeah.
So it's individual players and individual institutions that have to protect themselves and their reputations. Because now it's what everyone's talking about in terms of college football and NIL is Florida.
And Rashada right now is at Arizona State. He's one of six scholarship quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. One of them is the transfer who started at Notre Dame last year but left because Notre Dame stole Wake Forest's quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Sam Hartman. So, and he has zero money for NIL. Or the quote in the article is non-existent. So he went from $13 million to zero. Same guy, same kid.
Cautionary tale.
And, gotta protect yourself.
5 months, you know.
And he's 18 years old. Man, what a lesson.
And he hasn't even started practice yet.
Man. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, some grumblings out of the Pro Bowl that sound a whole lot different than what we heard a couple months ago. What changed? We'll get into that coming up next. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game.